views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome to the Melanated Roots Radio Show. We have a live show for you today. Today is July 17th, 2017. And I am your co-host, Brother Tommy, sitting here live and direct with Brother Rio. Today, we're going to go ahead and do a part two of the first show. The first show was The Origin of the Moors in the Nile Valley and their global migrations. And we're going to do a part two of that. But we're going to deal with a few topics or issues prior to getting to the topic. So very excited. And I thank you guys for being patient and allowing us to go through this learning curve.
This is a audience participation show. So if you have any comments or you'd like to participate in the topic, you can reach us at 866-510-9025. Hit **, and we'll be able to see that your hand is raised in the queue. And Brother Tommy or myself will get you on so that you can express your comments. We'll be able to see that your hand is raised in the queue, and we'll get you on so that you can express your comments. Do you have anything you want to open up with, Tom?
What we were going to do was prior to getting into the topic of the origin of the Moors in the Nile Valley, we were going to first deal with some issues that's been in the news, and the main issue that we decided to deal with today is police brutality. I don't watch much mainstream media, but as I've been talking to a lot of different people, I've tuned into a little mainstream media here recently, and the killings and the brutality and basically the same treatment by these police officers is continuing to exist. So it's something that we definitely want.
Okay, well, I know that I observed some of the video. I don't know if it's the latest video, but there was a homeless woman, and she was getting brutalized, terrorized by a police officer. And I couldn't even watch the whole video. But it pretty much touched my heart. But it got me to thinking as to, you know, why these situations still occur and the frequency that they still occur. So it seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same. So I would like to open up with some information that I found that was prevalent in the past, but it's still on the books today. And it may have a direct effect to the atrocities that we are experiencing at the hands of these overseers. Casual Killing Act of 1669 declared it's legal to kill a slave while correcting because malice could not be presumed. The legislation goes like this. In October 1669, Act 1, an act about the casual killing of slaves. Whereas the only law in force for the punishment of refractory servants resisting their master, mistress, or overseer cannot be inflicted upon Negroes, nor the obstinacy of many of them by other than violent means suppressed. Be it enacted and declared by this Grand Assembly, if any slave resist his master or others by his master's order correcting him, and by the extremity of the correction should chance to die, that his death shall not be considered a felony, but the master or that person appointed by the master to punish him be acquitted from molestation. Since it cannot be presumed that malice existed, which alone makes murder a felony, should induce any man to destroy his own estate. So that was an act that was passed in 1669. And I believe it was in the state of Virginia. But we well know that once one state adopts a particular type of legislation, They pretty much all follow suit in some way, shape, or form. So this kind of gives an idea of how they were viewing our people at a particular time in history. But these laws are still on the books. And from what I'm seeing, I would say that it's definitely in full force to this day. You have any thoughts about that, Brother Tommy? Brother Tommy, yeah, you got a lot of static on your mic.
Yeah, he sounds really bad. You might try reconnecting, but I left a message. I was hearing popping off his line when I was listening through the station, like, you know, his levels might be going up in the red or something. But again, you know, we live right now, so I had to adjust on the fly. So, Brother Tommy, you can try back in by calling in with a phone, and I'll just handle y'all breaks and stuff, man. So, you know, that's why I'm here. If y'all want to do it that way and just call in with the phone, bro, and you'll sound a whole lot better. That makes sense, Brother Rio?
Makes sense to me. So I'll just keep everything rolling. And again, if you have any comments or anything that you want to add to the discussion, you can reach us at 866-510-9025. Hit star star, and we'll get you on the air. After I saw that, I was reminded of pretty much hearing about cases where an individual has the right to defend themselves if they are being unlawfully detained or arrested. So what I did was I went through and I just looked up some of the court cases. And one of those court cases, this is a quote, "Citizens may resist unlawful arrest to the point of taking an arresting officer's life if necessary." This is Plummer versus State. This premise was upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States in the case of John Bad Elk versus U.S. The court stated, where the officer is killed in the course of the disorder which naturally accompanies an attempted arrest that is resisted, the law looks with very different eyes upon the transaction when the officer had the right to make the arrest from what it does if the officer had no right. What may be murder in the first case might be nothing more than manslaughter in the other, or the facts might show that no offense had been committed. An arrest made with a defective warrant, or one issued without affidavit, or one that fails to allege a crime is within jurisdiction, and one who is being arrested may resist arrest and break away. If the arresting officer is killed by one who is so resisting, the killing will be no more than an involuntary manslaughter. When a person being without fault is in a place where he has a right to be, is violently assaulted, he may, without retreating, repel by force, and if, in the responsible exercise of his right of self-defense, his assailant is killed, he is justified. That's Runyon versus State. These principles apply as well to an officer attempting to make an arrest who abuses his authority and transcends the bounds thereof by the use of unnecessary force and violence, as they do to a private individual who unlawfully uses such force and violence. An illegal arrest is an assault and battery. The person so attempted to be restrained of his liberty has the same right to use force in defending himself as he would in repelling any other assault and battery. So I'm reading over these cases and I'm wondering, you know, as much brutality that's going on today, why people who do fight back either end up in jail or they end up in the morgue. Brother Tommy, are you back, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here. I was just listening to you, looking for a good point to break in and making sure that I'm on.
Okay. Well, feel free to interject in any time if you have anything that you would like to contribute. I was just saying that it would seem contrary to these these cases, and some of these are Supreme Court cases, that we do in fact have the right to defend ourselves, even against the police, if we are being unlawfully arrested. Because a lot of times, go ahead, brother.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be real strategic. I wish we would have gotten an opportunity to get this worked out, but, you know, I was on the road. I agree with you. I'm listening to what you're saying in the conversation that we had had about the Casual Killing Act. It basically does a good job describing what's going on. If you look at the incidences that are happening throughout the country and you're looking at the outcome that are coming out from them, I think that slave act law that you just read basically was a very good statement in terms of exactly what's going on, because there's no one getting blamed, convicted, sent to jail, except one or two here or there, and it must be a situation that is still on the books and that is still the mindset of the people who are in power, because they're acting out that particular act on an everyday basis. You know, we can go across the gamut, whether it be way back to Rodney King, to brother Malice Wayne Green, Amadou Diallo. You can look at all these different cases and see that must be the way that they're perceiving it, that they're correcting slaves, and in the process of correcting these slaves, that if it leads to them dying, if it leads to severe injuries, that's just what it's going to be, and there will be no punishment or no redress by the courts. So it's definitely a situation we need to pay full attention to.
I would agree, brother. I would definitely agree. And it would seem that something is amiss, because if these cases are stating that we do have the right to defend ourselves, but we are constantly seeing people who are convicted just for trying to defend themselves and keep themselves safe. And I will even take it a step further. It also goes on to state that one may come to the aid of another being unlawfully arrested, just as he may where one is being assaulted, molested, raped, or kidnapped. Thus, it is not an offense to liberate one from the unlawful custody of an officer, even though he may have submitted to such custody without resistance. So not only do you have a right to defend yourself if you're being unlawfully detained, you also have the ability, or we the people have the ability, to, if we see an injustice taking place between the interaction of a citizen and the police, maybe I shouldn't say citizen, but the people and the police, we also have an opportunity to jump in and right this wrong, which, a lot of times we're seeing these videos on media, be it Facebook or Instagram or YouTube or what have you. And, they even go so far as to make it, popularize it in movies. Don't worry about it, brother. We're getting it all on film. We're getting it all. It's on the phone. It's going straight up to the web, where I know if I was in that position, I'm just looking at him like, hey, put the camera down, get this dude up off me, help me. You know what I'm saying? But we are constantly standing around watching and filming the brutalization and the terrorism that is going on. And I understand that in the heat of battle, you never truly know what a person is going to do. I would like to think that if I'm in that situation and I have the opportunity to help someone in that matter, that I would have the courage to do that. Offhand, I think that I would, but also I know that, this is a beast, and he is armed, and if he feels threatened in any manner, he's going to unload. So for me to jump in, you know, I'm pretty much extending my life for the sake of another. And, you know, I'm prayerful that I would have the courage to be able to do that, because I think as a people, we need to have more courage and to participate in our own salvation and protection of each other. You got any thoughts on that, brother? Protection of each other. You got any thoughts on that, brother?
Yeah, absolutely. But the only thing that I would like to engage with you on that particular line of thought of, you know, stopping a police officer if he's unlawfully doing something, or if he's, you know, taking it too far. And you and I discussed, in the status that we are in this country, can we protect ourselves in that situation? Can we step in? Like, for instance, if you look at the Eric Garner case in the, all the people sitting around watching it and filming it, you know, and why did the blacks who were around in that situation, looking at the situation, why did they not do anything? And, you know, we know that the fear exists, you know, these Tammy Hughes have been committing high levels of brutality against our people for a very long time. And black folks are still immersed with the fear of what this white man can do to them when it really boils down to it. But you and I discussed how under common law that you have a right to protect yourself. You have a right to step in. You have a right to make a citizen's arrest. You know, I look at that. I don't want to use that term. I don't know if citizen's the right word either. I'm in agreement with you. But you have a right to do a citizen arrest to protect yourself in that situation. I mean, because you're looking at people all across the country filming it instead of helping. So what I'd like for you, Brother Rios, maybe if we can get some clarification on having that right under common law. And now that we've been pulled from underneath the common law and have these state statutes and codes applied to us, how are we still able to protect ourselves? Are we still able to stop an unlawful police officer? Are we still able to stop this police officer who's going berserk, considering the fact that we have been removed underneath from common law? So I'm gonna mute myself and maybe see if you could speak to that, brother, and we can turn that wheel, because that's a big issue. You know, if they're willing to jump on a brother's back like animals and kill him right there in the middle of the street in front of everyone, we assume that they're going to do that to any people who step in and try to do something as well. So what confidence do people have? Can they have?
I would choose to attack this, since this is a world of duality and we're dealing with people who don't think like us. What I want to do, first of all, is we're going to unpack this. This may take a little time, but it's going to give us a base and an understanding of and a perspective of everything that needs to be considered. The first perspective I'm going to come from is from, I would say, from the oppressors, or for those who enforce these trivial statutes, codes, what they call laws, which we can clarify later on. But this is an article written from an ex-cop who turned lawyer. And he's explaining why the quotes that I just read of the Supreme Court cases, which I found on the internet, really don't apply in a lot of situations. So he's saying that a large number of internet wannabe experts cite cases from various websites when arguing the proposition that a citizen may resist a police officer making an unlawful arrest. But let's look at the post, the actual cases, and the law. First up is citizens may resist unlawful arrest to the point of taking an arresting officer's life if necessary, which was Plummer v. State. This premise was again upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States in the case of John Bad Elk versus the United States. The court stated where the officer is killed in the course of a disorder which naturally accompanies an attempted arrest that is resisted, the law looks with very different eyes upon the transaction when the officer had the right to make the arrest from what it does if the officer had no right. What may be murder in the first case might be nothing more than manslaughter in the other, or the facts might show that no offense had been committed. Okay, well, let's unpack Plummer versus State. First, the opinion of the Indiana Supreme Court does not have the quoted material anywhere in the opinion, not even in the headnotes, which are not part of the opinion anyway. Second, what the opinion does say is the exact opposite. It states, if the officer is resisted before he has used needless force and violence, he may then press forward and overcome such resistance, even to the taking of the life of the person arrested, if absolutely necessary. If the officer is being resisted, then the officer can use any force necessary, up to and including deadly force. Nothing at all about the citizen using deadly force. What the opinion does state is that if the officer uses unnecessary, excessive force, a person has the right to defend themselves from that excessive force. Here, the officer hit Plummer over the head from behind with a billy club and then shot at Plummer. Plummer shot back more accurately and killed Marshall Dorn. The court said, when a person being without fault is in a place where he has a right to be, is violently assaulted, he may, without retreating, repel force by force. And if in the reasonable exercise of his right of self-defense, his assailant is killed, he is justifiable. Plummer is still good law for what it actually says, that a citizen may defend himself against an officer's excessive force. Now, that is a key phrase. Plummer is still good law for what it actually says, that a citizen may defend himself against an officer's excessive force. So, versus the U.S., the case, opinion of a common law.
Rio, you're going out, man. Let me check your mic for a second. All right, try it now.
Check, check, 1, 2.
Okay, you good.
Okay. At common law, if a party resisted arrest by an officer without warrant and who had no right to arrest him, and if in the course of that resistance, the officer was killed, the offense of the party resisting arrest would be reduced from what would have been murder. So again, stating at common law. The court goes on to list about 10 citations to where it upholds that decision. And it extends it to defective warrants and also warrants that are issued without an affidavit. Okay, is that better? I've moved it away.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll try it again. So basically, what we're looking at is that under common law, these court cases are stating that we have a right to defend ourselves. But it seems like what we call statutes and codes are coming back into play and they are overriding the common law. And the way that they end, I guess through an explanation between common law and also the statutes and codes. Brother Tommy, I see you unmuted yourself. You have something you want to contribute?
Yo, Brother Tommy, we can't hear you. Okay, Brother Rio, you want to pick back up? Not able to hear Brother Tommy. Brother Rio.
My apologies.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
So what I was saying was that what we're having is a discrepancy between the common law, which we refer to as the Constitution, and statutes and codes, which are legislation that is passed in Congress now and also on a state and a city level. And how that seems to be overriding the laws that we're supposed to have access to in the Constitution. So there seems to be something amiss, because as far as I understand it, the common law is supposed to be, or the Constitution is supposed to be, the law of the land. And it's supposed to be untrumpable. Excuse the pun. But for some reason, it seems to have been usurped in some way, shape, or form.
Well, Brother Rio, going back, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I'll go ahead and mute myself. Okay, go ahead, brother.
No, don't mute yourself. We're okay. And that's what I was speaking to before I got taken off, is obviously if common law is stating that these are what people are supposed to be able to do, but yet you're having situations where officers are being extremely over aggressive and you don't have any recourse or redress because they're all getting acquitted, then we would, it sounds to me like we would have to at that point start dealing with one's status. Do you agree with that, brother?
I would agree with that, brother. And that again, goes directly to the point of being able to fall under the Constitution or falling under these statutes and codes, which would appear to be trumping or overriding the Constitution. And in order to best understand that, I think we're going to have to delve into history a little bit. We may have to go back to England, to where common law, at least for the United States, began. But first, we can define liberty. Liberty can be defined as the exemption from slavery, bondage, imprisonment, or control of another, freedom from external restraint or compulsion, as from Webster's New College Dictionary. Also be defined as freedom, exemption from extraneous control, the power of the will to follow dictates of restricted choice and to direct the external acts of the individual without restraint, coercion, or control from other persons. And that is from Black's Law Dictionary, the third edition.
Okay.
So beginning with the Magna Carta, the governments in Britain and later, of course, the United States, they pretty much recognized the right of the people to forcefully resist unlawful arrest by the government agents, including the police. So they could not use deadly force when it wasn't deemed necessary. It was long recognized as a natural and common law right of not only the person being arrested, but also the one's fellow countrymen trying to assist him in resisting such an unlawful arrest. Common law supersedes statutory law. Statutory law is private law, unless an individual knowingly and freely consents to waive his natural, unalienable, and common law rights, and consents to submit to statutory and contractual policy.
Brother Rio, that right there hits it real hard, because like you said, like they said, to consent, and we know that we all are consenting and being pulled in unwittingly, unknowingly, by what they refer to as invisible contracts, and they're pulling us in from all directions, which is given our consent, whether it be a driver's license, a banking account. You know, I don't want to go too deep in that, but obviously that's the issue. So listening to you speak, this is really dealing with the fact that what status you're in, and also what nation are you a part of, or so that you can have those protections in place. Because when you consent unknowingly, or whatever they say, when you consent, obviously It gives them a right to move forward in the manner in which they choose.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. What we recognize as invisible contracts, that's what they refer to as statutory policy.
Right.
I say, you know, statutory policy because, strictly speaking, you know, law refers only to the public common law, which being the highest law in the land would be the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Whereas these legislative acts that I mentioned before are, again, statutes, acts, codes, regulations on a local level. They may even call them ordinances. So they have, you know, various things that they will call them. But all of these things are private law. And the jurisdiction is extremely limited. So you actually have to contract into these statutes, codes, regulations, and ordinances. And as you said before, one of the biggest ways that we do that unknowingly is through the driver's license, which is a contract. Mm-hmm. They make it seem like we have to have a driver's license, but again, that's a topic for another show. But right. You know, they have to
and brother Rio, that contract being the highest law of the land, that's the one thing that Europeans hold to the highest law of the land, is a contract binding you to something. You know what I'm saying? Because we discussed that. So, you know, that should put us, you know, all the people listening and everybody into a mindset, just like you just said, that inalienable rights coming up underneath common law but yet these statutes and these codes are regulating and governing people. So that should let us know that these statutes and codes are regulating and governing people that are within a certain status.
That is correct. But hey, what also gives them the power to be able to do it is that the power to contract is written within the highest law of the land. So it's in the Constitution that the people have the ability to private contract, and that the Constitution will not hinder any contract that is written. So it's going to be validated.
Okay.
Between the two parties. And the court system, that's actually, you know, what the statutes, the codes, the regulations, that's what everything is built upon. It's built upon that clause in the Constitution. That's pretty much how they circumvent the Constitution. They've come up with their own brand of laws, but they're, to us, or people who have the ability to get into their proper status, they're only policies, codes, and regulations. But they've created basically a web of contracts to where, when people enter those contracts, these contracts are binding, whether you know it or you don't.
Or not.
Thus, term invisible contracts.
Absolutely. Hey, Brother Bragg's got a statement or a question that he would like to ask, and I'm going to unmute him to bring him on in. Go ahead, Brother Bragg.
And greetings.
Yeah, guys. Peace, guys. How are you today? I was just listening. And you know what? Funny thing, man. I've been studying this now for a couple of months. But status is so important in this country, man. That black, Negro, colored status is got no standing under the law. As a matter of fact, it's a corpse. It's a dead person. Now, that's to my understanding. I'm studying, so I'm a student, and all I do is study. So don't take anything I say for gospel. Research what I say. I was looking at some other things you got. I'm sorry, guys. As soon as I talk, my animals always act up. Another thing. The sheriff is the law of the land. I've been reading about these policies and forces. So what I'm seeing is that everything is a corporation. Everything being a corporation, these corporations are all governed by D.C., 6.5 miles, the Capitol Wall.
10 by 10.
Well, they gave 3.5 acres back to George Washington.
Okay.
So it's 6.5. He donated the land. That's why they gave it back. Many things, man. This is a great topic. This is one of my pet peeves with my young people that I talk to. Study this law. Policy of force is different from officer has sworn an oath of office. An officer has sworn an oath of office has the pledge to the Constitution. Now, that's a whole other thing because, you know, in the Constitution was technically usurped. So a lot of the things you guys are talking about, I go over every day and I go over and over because it's mind-boggling to me. You have to know what your standing is in jurisdiction. This is what I'm studying. Really, I wish I had a bunch of people to bounce off a whole bunch so it would become crystal clear because we're talking about legalities of law and legalese. These people speak a different language purposefully to leave you not knowing what court you're on. And that's all I had to say, guys. Beautiful topic. I'm going to sit back and listen because you guys are in the point in the direction that I'm moving all the time. I love that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Brother Bug. I appreciate you coming on in. And I feel what you're saying because I'm pretty much at the same place you at. Me and Brother Rio, we've been getting together, going hard, trying to understand status and how to get our status changed in this country, because that is what is allowing them to do the things that they're doing, you know what I'm saying, and get away with it because of the status that we're in. But also, I want to go back to what we just said a minute ago about invisible contracts and how the majority of us are unwittingly entering into these invisible contracts, and they're binding across the board. So, for instance, let's say you have a brother who says, "Hey, man, we are sovereign. We should not be paying taxes in the society." You know what I'm saying? And he'll bring up information that speaks to why we should not be paying taxes. But don't forget, you went and got a bank account. And now when you went and got that bank account, you pulled yourself into an invisible contract because you didn't read the writing. And that invisible contract to that bank account now supersedes everything that you've been talking about, that you're sovereign and you shouldn't have to pay these taxes, because now you have entered the king's banking system. And that alone makes it to where you have to pay taxes. That's why you have brothers going in the court getting dealt with certain ways, because they haven't dealt away or got rid of these invisible contracts that are binding them before they went into court. And so these invisible contracts is what prevents the decision from moving in their direction. And that's one thing that I want a lot of people to really understand. We are signing ourselves up for these people to act like this and to treat it this way. And we have to understand, look at all the contracts that we are in and that we use on our daily life. We need to really identify those and try to figure out how we can pull out of those so that we can now not be so strongly affected by them. Go ahead, Brother Rio.
Brother Bragg, I thank you for your comments, brother. You said a whole lot in a little bit of time.
Yes, you did.
Because the rabbit hole runs deep. And of course, in order for the people who are in power now, in order to stay in control, they make the game as complicated to understand as possible so that people won't catch on. So yes, they have a lot of legalese. So they have definitions, not even definitions. They have terms of words that we may use every day, and we think we understand what they mean. But when we come up into their venue, because they do have control of the country at this present time, they're using the same words, but the terms of which are applied according to the contracts that we have entered into, knowingly or unknowingly, apply to us. So that is where the phrase ignorance of the law is no excuse, because actually we're not really dealing with law. You may have heard some people saying that, you know, the Constitution has no place in the courts. That's because, you know, you're coming in front of a magistrate, not a judge, a magistrate. And a magistrate is one who looks over financial affairs, decides who is in the wrong and who is owed what. So it's all about commerce and it's all about money. So it's got nothing to do with law. He's looking at the contracts that are before him. And he's trying to decide, okay, well, who's in honor? Who's not in honor? Okay, well, you are not in honor. So, yeah, you owe this person X, Y, Z. Or, you know, you're going to have to pay, you know, the people. And we're choosing to make you pay. We are choosing to make you pay by going into forced labor, which is slavery, legalized slavery.
Absolutely.
One example that I can give that may make things a little bit more crystal clear is one might draw the analogy of a man who joins a private club or buys a house in a neighborhood controlled by a private homeowners association. The club or association has the right to determine the rules for its members, along with the penalties for breaking those rules. Strictly speaking, these rules, often called bylaws, are not true law. They are so-called private law. That is, the rules or policies apply only to members of this private group. The man is not forced to join the club or association. He does so through his voluntary consent in a contract in which commercial law applies. He pays his dues in exchange for being a member of the club association, which is with its attendant duties, obligations, and benefits, as well as the privileges. Thus, consideration is exchanged. As a member, the man has consented to the jurisdiction of the club association in the club association related matters only. A non-member who is not inside the club association's building, on its land, or attending some private event staged by the club association is not bound by the rules or policies of the club association. However, should a non-member voluntarily consent to abide by the club association's rules, policies, in exchange for being allowed inside the club, along with other benefits and privileges, that non-member has therein contracted with the club association and is under its jurisdiction regarding rules, policies of conduct, at least as long as he remains within the club association's building and or is enjoying some other benefits and privileges normally associated with membership in that club association. Such rules and policies created under a private contract are known as private law. In this case, commercial law, as well as contract law, which evolved from merchant law or the law of the seas. The mer in the word merchant is derived from the Phoenician Canaanite. Well, we won't even go into that right now.
Right. So, but Mario, I'm glad you was moving in that direction, because another way that they're instituting this game they're playing is by the definition of words. And a lot of people believe that, you know, you look up a definition of a word in the dictionary and that is what it is, when we have to understand definitions are agreed upon by those who have the power to enforce it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. As well as definitions are different from terms. You can have a definition, but within a contract, you could take a word and you have the ability to, quote unquote, change that definition, which is then labeled a term. Mm-hmm. And within that contract, that term means whatever you define it as. So if we take the color blue and I'm making a contract with you and I'm telling you that the word blue is going to mean apples, then as long as we are within the confines of that contract, whenever you see blue, it's talking about apples. When you're talking to everybody else outside of the contract, then blue is, like you said, whatever the accepted definition are amongst a group of people. So we really need to understand the difference between definitions and terms.
Absolutely. And this takes us back to our original point, Brother Rio, in terms of police brutality, or and like you said, that the police is just the extension of the system, and the system having these people under their charter, And by having a charter, you know, and we looked up, you look up the very definition of the word charter. This charter is what is pulled people in to a certain status. And now you are under contract in that status. And the agents of the system can do what they're designed to do without recourse or redress.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that back into play, because in my readings, they gave an example of how all of this came down from British law. And it gave the example of a man who was being arrested, and just a passerby just, you know, happened to say, "Hey, you know, what are you doing? Why are you arresting him? Let me see your papers." And the officer's papers were not in order. So the citizen that just walked up demanded that the person be released. And the officer refused, whereupon the citizen pulled out a sword. And then him and the officer started having a sword fight, of which the officer lost, and he was subsequently killed. The person that he was arresting resisted in no way, didn't even know the person who came and helped him out. But it wasn't required for him to do anything, because the common law, again, states that if you see someone who's being unfairly arrested, then you have the opportunity to remedy that situation, even if it may result in the death of the arresting officer. The man was tried, and he was found not guilty, and he was acting responsibly and within the confines of the common law. So what has changed from to this Hello? Period is not...
Yeah, Brother Rio, you're going in and out again. Try moving your mic away. Let me unmute you. Okay, try now.
Oh, okay. He pushed off the board altogether. Okay. Yeah, he's off the board, but that's okay. And basically what we're trying to bring to the people is let people understand why these police officers or the system itself is acting in the manner in which it's acting, and the people who are being victimized by the system have no redress. And you don't have redress is because of the status you're in. And also we as a people don't have a nation. Me and Brother Rio also were eventually talking about the refugee status, or the title, or the word refugee. Brother Rio, go ahead and unmute yourself. The word refugee. And we all remember back in Katrina that George Bush referred to the people, or the victims of Hurricane Katrina, the black folk down there, as refugees, and he consistently said that. Well, a refugee speaks to someone that is not domiciled within a nation. So if the president is referring to you as a refugee, that means he is telling you right there that you are of a certain status, or you have a certain status that is recognized by the country. And it's not the same status as some of these other white folks in the country, because they wouldn't have referred to these other white folks when things happen as refugees. So that's another thing that we need to look at as well. Brother Rio, you back?
I am, sir. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right. Yeah, that's a very good topic that you bring up, brother. But that's another rabbit hole that goes.
Yeah.
That goes
yes, deep. It is. Yes, it is. But well, I was just bringing that back in terms of status, like Brother Bragg would talk about what one status is in this country and how that is determining the type of treatment that we receive from the people, from the nation as a whole.
All right. We'll pick it back up. It's time for a break. So we will pick that up on the other side of the break. So don't go anywhere. And if you have anything to contribute, you can reach us at 866-510-9025. Hit **, and we will get you on air. And we'll be right back after this break. I'm
later.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are back and we're ready to continue to move forward with the topic. Brother Rio, how you feeling over there, brother?
I'm feeling good, brother. I'm feeling good. I wanted to kind of clarify some information so that the people can get a better understanding of what we mean when we're talking about status. Status in particular is talking about what you are aligning yourself with. Are you aligning yourself with and who you're aligning yourself with? Are you aligning yourself under the common law, or are you aligning yourself under statutes, codes, regulations, ordinances, and UCCs, commercial, mercantile, or just, you know, different laws that don't apply to us as a people? One thing that we can look at is, you know, the same laws under the common law are still in existence today. But in 1942, when the Interstate Commission on Crime published the Uniform Arrest Act, every state recognized and protected the right to resist. The first major case regarding the right to forcefully resist unlawful arrest was decided by the Supreme Court of Indiana in 1893, which was Plummer versus State. The defendant Plummer was convicted in the trial court of manslaughter of a police officer. The Supreme Court of Indiana ruled that by the judge not giving adequate instructions to the jury regarding self-defense and the alternatives of conviction on a lesser charge or even acquittal, the trial court erred, and Plummer's manslaughter conviction was reversed. The Supreme Court of Indiana stated that although the police officer may or may not have held the authority to make a lawful, warrantless arrest of Plummer for a misdemeanor not witnessed by the police officer, for purpose of argument in reaching a decision, the court would assume the worst case scenario possible for this defendant. That is, that the police officer had the lawful authority to make the arrest. The court then stated that a police officer, in effecting an arrest, is allowed to use force, but only that force which is necessary. The defendant Plummer had not resisted or behaved violently, as he had not even been told by the police officer that he was under arrest. Plummer had merely walked toward his home with a revolver in his hand and told the officer to keep away. Since the police officer, specifically the marshal of the town, shot a pistol and then struck the defendant Plummer with a nightstick before even telling Plummer he was under arrest, the police officer had committed a battery by the use of excessive force. Pistols, shots exchanged, resulting in the death of the police officer. Plummer was indicted and convicted of manslaughter. The Supreme Court of Indiana concluded that defendant Plummer had a clear right to defend himself, even to taking the life of his assailant. So basically, you have different scenarios that are going on. That were possible. One of them being the arrest is lawful and no excessive force is used by the officer, which would be the worst case scenario for the defendant. The second option would be the arrest is lawful and excessive force is used by the officer. The third one would be the arrest is unlawful and no excessive force is used by the officer. And the fourth one would be the arrest is unlawful and excessive force is used by the officer, which of course would be the best case scenario for the defense. So the court has to take assumptions when viewing any of these accounts, and they lean on evidence that's going to sway, the jury one way or another. And sometimes they advise them accordingly. Sometimes they didn't. Of course, as time goes on, juries have begun to be faded out. So it's just you up against the magistrate. But right. In 1900, the Supreme Court of the United States mirror and affirmed that Plummer versus State ruling by the Supreme Court of Indiana. So they upheld it. Excuse me. So he had the right to defend himself. As we continue on in the timeline, we see the courts begin to change how they view these cases, and they start to emphasize something a little differently. So until the late 1960s, most states recognized, albeit grudgingly, the common law right to resist arrest. By 1969, that right had been transmuted, not by statute or constitutional amendment, but through judicial activism, into a revocable privilege, one that had to be to serve the interest of the police and the state in securing convictions. The Alaska State Supreme Court, Terry Glenn Miller versus the state of Alaska, was one of the first states to suppress this right, stating, "It is argued that if a peace officer is making an illegal arrest, but is not using force, something that could not occur given that an arrest by strict definition is an act of armed coercion. But the remedy of the citizen should be that of suing the officer for false arrest, not resistance with force." Illogically, that same ruling also stated, "The weight of authoritative precedent supports a right to repel an unlawful arrest with force." This was the rule at common law. It was based on the proposition that everyone should be privileged to use reasonable force to prevent an unlawful invasion of his physical integrity and personal liberty. In short, the court ruled that people have a long recognized common law right to resist, but they cannot exercise that right. So a few years later, the Idaho State Supreme Court also attempted to nullify the right to resist in Richardson versus Idaho. John Richardson was convicted of resisting arrest through violence and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Richardson and his ex-wife, who were having dinner in a restaurant, got into an argument and were asked to leave when the latter became loud and profane. Two off-duty, uninformed police officers escorted them outside and then tried to arrest Richardson for disorderly conduct. After he became annoyed by their unwarranted intrusion, Richardson kicked one of the police officers, then grabbed one of their pistols, which he fired into the air, rather than at his assailants, as he was entitled to, both morally and under the Supreme Court's still valid 1900 Bad Elk precedent legally. Citing the Miller decision in Alaska, the Idaho Supreme Court stated, "More than one state has without legislative action modified the traditional common law rule and has adopted the rule that a private citizen may not use force to resist a peaceful arrest, despite the fact that any arrest entails the use of force. We are of the opinion that the trend is and should be away from the traditional common law rule. And therefore, we hold that if a person has reasonable ground to believe he is being arrested by a peace officer, it is his duty to refrain from using force or any weapon in resisting arrest, regardless of whether or not there is a legal basis for the arrest." The Idaho Supreme Court, in a 2008 ruling, State of Idaho versus Lusby, again eviscerated the right to resist even illegal invasion and search of one's home by police officers. The trial court had ruled the evidence from the illegal search to be inadmissible and had dismissed all charges against Lusby. But in a bizarre twisting of logic, the Idaho State Supreme Court, while admitting that the search was illegal insisted that Lusby's resistance to the illegal invasion of her home retroactively legalized the unconstitutional search. Therefore, without any enabling legislation contrary to the still controlling U.S. Supreme Court precedent of John Bad Elk versus U.S., and contrary to hundreds of years of common law, the Idaho State Supreme Court created out of thin air, quote, a duty to submit to arrest, a police officer's privilege to commit criminal acts for the purpose of nullifying the exclusionary rule, something the Supreme Court acknowledged. In short, this court said that any police officer can nullify the Fourth Amendment anytime he pleases, simply by claiming that the victim committed the supposed crime of resisting. What you think about that, Brother Tommy?
Man, that's heavy. That's heavy. Because and when you listen to a lot of these incidences where police officers are involved and it's escalating, you notice that's the first thing that the police officer is screaming. Why are you resisting? Stop resisting. And even in the case where they're hitting you with something very hard, striking a heavy blow, which is going to cause you to react, they're consistently bringing up the same thing over and over again. Why are you resisting? Now you basically clarified why, and it hit real heavy. That's heavy, brother. That's heavy.
So, I mean, and they've taken us, with these invisible contracts, they've taken us out of the common law. So, you know, we're not allowed to really bring up the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment protection in the courts. And now they've given the police a way to circumvent their responsibilities, their oaths to the Constitution through these statutes, codes, and ordinances that apply locally and to issues of commerce. So all this leads one to question, you know, how am I being perceived if I'm being subject to all these atrocities? And why is the Constitution still in effect at all?
Well, let me ask you a question, Brother Rio. Would you agree that the Constitution is a charter?
I would agree that the Constitution is a charter.
So if we look at the word charter in the Black Law's Dictionary, and when we read what the Constitution says, which is a charter, an instrument that establishes a body politic or other organization, or that grants rights, liberties, or powers to its citizens or members. So they're telling you right there, by being underneath this charter, that they are taking rights over you, that they are taking whatever natural you have and removing it, and are granting you certain rights, liberties, and privileges. So,
well,
I would state that a little bit differently,
brother. The Constitution is a charter for what we have to understand. You have to study history in order to understand what the game has become. What this country started out as is not what it is today. And it really didn't start off from, quote unquote, what they call the founding fathers. It really didn't start off advantageous for us anyway, because, you know, they forced their way into our lands, and you know, we were forced to deal with them anyway. And truth be told, we as Moors, quote unquote, so-called Blacks or so-called African Americans, we are not a party to the Constitution anyway, not in the way that everybody tries to tie into it. And the court case that tells you that would be the best one that tells you that is the Dred Scott case, which states that no Negro could ever be a citizen of the United States and has no standing that a white man is bound to respect. I don't know.
Okay, brother Rio, quick question. So with that being said, that a Negro could never be what they refer to as a true citizen underneath this charter, then what would we be?
In order to be in our proper status, we have to be what our ancestor was, what our fathers was, what our mothers were. What did they go by? They didn't go by, when you go back far enough, before the Tamahues came in and started labeling everybody, rose in power, and had the power to enforce and propagandize and spread those labels mm-hmm. until everybody accepted them. What did we call ourselves before, we were interacting with them? What labels or terms are currently on the books that we can take advantage of? And then once we gain our power, we can refer to ourselves as anything we want to.
Yeah, I feel you on that, Brother Rio, but what I was really more specifically saying is that if you look what you just said about the Dred Scott case, also what we just were mentioning on the fact that they used a charter to establish what they were establishing, and that covered certain people. If black people in this country are not covered by that charter, if they are not privy to that, those common law things or this charter, then what my real question is, then how is the system viewing these people?
To unpack that, we need to go through a little history. We can tie into the Constitution, but we have to tie into it through the treaties that have been established and that are upheld within the Constitution, because it says in the Constitution that treaties are the highest law in the land, even higher than constitutions, treaties that will be made, treaties that are still standing, and treaties that have been made in the past.
And treaties, which are contracts. Well, treaties are contracts. Yeah. Remember, we were talking about how contracts are the highest of the land. Go ahead, brother.
That is correct. And the contract, the names under which we have been contracted under would be the term of Moors. So that is one reason it would be advantageous for us to reestablish that nationality name, come together as Moors, because there are certain benefits that apply to us. We can enforce the Constitution, which the Constitution is a charter, but it really is a contract that limits the powers of Congress and the establishment of the United States, which, as Brother Braggs relayed earlier, is a 10 by 10 square block, of which
6.5,
right, which is the seat of their power, and they have extended that area to encompass the entire United States through using zip codes and through these invisible contracts that we've been kicking on. So what we need to do is we have to reclaim our national name. We have to cut these invisible contracts, and then we have to pretty much establish our own government, because we were never meant to be a part of this government in the first place. This was for the Tamahues or the Europeans that came over here and set up shop on the land of our ancestors. This was to govern them. We had our own thing going on. We had government, we had commerce, we were dealing with each other in a particular kind of way. And that's why you have two seals on the dollar bill. We could go into all that, but that could be at a later time as well. But the main point is that we had our own government established, and we were dealing with ourselves. We did not have to go to the Tamahues to intercede on our behalf to straighten out things. So we gave up power to self-determination, and we started going to these Tammany Hughes, and they started deciding things for us. And in order to do that, they decided that, well, we need to be in a contract under them, which was the purpose of the 14th Amendment. Once we came under contract for them, we are now part of their organization, and we are subject to their ordinances and laws, and we're viewed as property.
Okay. Check your mic again, Brother Rio.
Okay. How's that? Is that better?
Say again.
Better? Check. Mic check. 1, 2. Mic check. 1, 2.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep bringing it.
Okay. So I'm saying that once we came in under those contracts, we essentially became property. We became creations of the United States, the corporation.
And still scratchy, became... Brother Rio. Still scratchy, Brother Rio. Still scratchy.
How's that, brother? Is that a little better? Still scratchy?
Yeah, it's a little scratchy.
How's that? Is that better?
Go ahead. Keep bringing it. You're hitting on them.
Well, basically, since we fall under these ordinances and we've signed these invisible contracts, we're viewed as property.
Brother Rio, what we're going to do is have you call back in, because what you're talking about is really important, and I think people really need to hear it. And the manner in which it sounds, it's coming off very distorted. So just go ahead and go on out and come on back in, and we'll go ahead and continue where you're coming from. Because what I would like to do is connect the dots from police brutality, the behavior, and the brutality that is coming from these folks, and why it's coming from them. And the only way that we can protect ourselves is to understand the status that we have ourselves is in this caste system. Every time that we mark the word black, every time, go ahead, unmute yourself, bro. Every time we check African American, we are signing on to be treated a certain way. And I didn't really want to get too heavy into the word refugee, but if you look at the word refugee and you go to the United Nations definition of refugee, you know, they're dealing with someone who only needs minimal treatment. You know, a refugee only needs minimal treatment by a government or by a corporation or by any agency. And if you look at the way in which black folks are being treated in this society, it is minimal treatment in terms of you can do this to them, you can do that to them. You don't have to give them this. You don't have to give them that. You don't have to allow them to have this. You don't have to allow them to have this. Their status is refugee or something along that line, and therefore this is what they're going to receive from us until they pick up the mantle and understand. You know, of course they don't want us to understand, but until we understand what status we're in, how that status is being applied to us, until we understand the game, they're not going to stop doing what they're doing in any way, because based upon the status we're in, all that is required for us is just a minimal standard of treatment. Nothing more, nothing less. Brother, that's all you're going to get. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Brother Real. Yes, sir.
How am I sounding?
Much better? You back in there? You back in there?
Okay. Brother Tom, I just wanted to clarify on about the term refugee. Refugee by definition means you have no status. Mm-hmm. You are not considered a citizen anywhere. You don't belong to a nation. You don't have a people. You have no rights. You have no privileges. Mm-hmm. You are basically at the mercy of everyone. If someone wants to give you charity, then, you know, it's up to them in their good graces to do that. But if they turn their back of you, then the family of nations across the globe will not hold you or hold those people responsible in any way, shape, or manner. So that's why when Bush declared the people down in New Orleans refugees, it was such a slap in the face that most people didn't even realize. Because the people he was talking about and the people that showed on the news all the time were melanated people.
Without a doubt.
So, you know, the 14th Amendment made us citizens under the corporation of the United States, but it also forced us to be under these statutes, codes, policies, and ordinances, and also viewed as second-class citizens as well as chattel property. And, you know, you fall back into the 1669 code, you know, where they're not held responsible for pretty much keeping you in line. And long as they use buzzwords like, you know, put your hands behind your back. Why are you resisting arrest? As soon as he says why, basically he's saying, I'm about to go in on you. And, you know, I pretty much cleared myself to go in on you because I've said that you're resisting arrest. Now I can escalate force to whatever I need to do in order to get this goal accomplished, which is to arrest you, put you into the system and, you know, subject you to free labor on our behalf, you know, and take advantage of your energy.
Absolutely. And Brother Rio, we got a caller, so I'm going to go to my caller real fast. But once we come back from the caller, I would like to talk about how the system treats people who are classified with certain statuses. And remember, we've just been using the word refugee and how they use that word to apply to our folks in Hurricane Katrina. And I want to speak to what police officers did to our brothers and sisters on the Danziger Bridge. Remember the Danziger Bridge in New Orleans? It went down up there with some police officers and the people they referred to as refugees. But we're going to go ahead and bring our caller in, Brother Red. What's up, Brother Red? Go and kick on him.
How are you brothers doing this evening?
Doing good,
brother. How you doing? All is well. Yeah, I got a quick question for you, brothers. Okay, I hear y'all. You talking about we refugees being misplaced, and you know, also people were slaves. Have you ever considered the fact that most of them brothers were kidnapped? And why don't they ever use the word kidnapped? Because if you're taken by force, we all know that's being kidnapped. Why do they use the term slaves instead of kidnapped? Because I noticed that kidnap is a punishable offense, but slavery is legal in certain forms. So could you brothers kick on that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree with you. Go ahead, Brother Real.
No, go ahead, Brother Tom. You got it.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, wording is very important in keeping their scheme together. And the manner, the words that they use and the manner in which they use them and the terms that they agreed upon to go, that these words are going to go by, are very important to keep the scheme going. And I agree. And plus, not only that, you know, certain words also expose them, you know, to liabilities and to certain people in the world being more knowledgeable about certain things they did. So they definitely aren't going to use the word kidnap, like you said, because it is punishable within a system of law. And slavery is legal in different forms, even to this day. And, you know, Brother Scotty and all the other brothers who code breakers, they go hard on how slavery is legal in many different ways. So, you know, I agree with you, Brother Reg. How you feeling, Brother Rio?
Brother Reggie, I'm going to kick it to you like this. Can you kidnap Mickey Mouse? Can you kidnap you know, the what's that little white girl? Snow White?
Was she really a little white girl?
Right. Hey, for real.
Meaning, can you kidnap Mickey Mouse? Yeah, I can. Yeah, you mean a person in a suit? Yeah, you can get him. But can you get the fictionary character? No, sir.
There you go. What I'm saying to you, or the point that I'm trying to illustrate, is that when you say kidnap, you have to kidnap a human being, someone who is considered flesh and blood and alive.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they changed the names of our ancestors so many times was they were creating fictional characters. There are no black people. There are no African Americans. There are no coloreds. There are truly no Negroes.
There's no all capital letter person either.
We understand that, but what I'm saying is, what does that obtain to being from a slave to a refugee to being kidnapped? Because there were actual people taken from the continent by force.
Yes, there were. But those people or the descendants of those people don't go by the same name. They go by African American, they go by black, as well as the people that were brought here were given, they were given the name of Negro. How is someone going to, how does someone who doesn't create you give you a name? It's fictitional. So they can't be convicted of kidnapping because they're referring, again, we're talking about terms. Okay. They're referring to terms of
Hey guys, can I get in there with y'all?
Go ahead, brother Bragg. Mario, I want to holler at you about them giving us the word Negro, because the word Negro goes back into Greek, which is an African word. But we're gonna build on that. Sure. Go ahead, brother Bragg.
Okay, my train of thought, right quick. Listen, the 14th Amendment, 13th Amendment. When they have the exchange, now first of all, let me make it quite clear. My belief is that we always was in this continent. We are the copper color people of this continent, of Americas. This continent, in my opinion, being older than Africa and all the other continents. This is the motherland, is what I'm saying. And the pyramids here are older than the pyramids in Africa and everywhere else. Okay, now let's get to this Constitution. An adhesion contract. After the Reconstruction, when the government bought the slaves from the slave owners, there was an exchange in that adhesion contract. The emancipated people who didn't leave were not emancipated. They became property of the United States government, citizen. If you're a citizen, you're property of the United States government. Okay, now remember, I'm a student. Research everything I say. Everything is for educational purposes, because we don't want nobody going off half-cocked until they know exactly what they're doing. Feel me?
Yes, absolutely.
Other things, 1781. That's when these people usurped the Constitution and took over and installed their government. Now, it's going to take you a lot of research. You can find 1781. I believe you can find it, but the intricate parts of it, like they had wars going on at the Constitution. They killed about 30-some people. I have to go in my notes. I'll give you some information and blow your cap back. This is what I do, man. I sit down and I get into these books because they don't feel that you and I are supposed to get into these books. But another thing. When you really get deep into this study, you're going to find out that these Indians, Egyptians is what I call them, because you're in Egypt. Listen, I believe what the ancestors left, they left it for a reason. Your shit is all over America in stone. Not in the paper Bible, not in all these different 501c3s and all this shit. Your shit is in stone all through America. And it's prohibited for you to walk through America. That's why you can't travel freely. Grand Canyon being a prime example, ISIS Temple in the Grand Canyon. They got all kind of stuff. Nevada. They got underground bases. This is from our people, bro. We always been here. Copper color people of America. And that's all I had to say. But on that 13th and 14th Amendment, that adhesion contract, because the 14th Amendment created persons as citizens. Persons. That's another corporation. I mean, I'm saying that this corporation thing blew my mind when I started getting into it, because all my life I'm walking around, and then one day I find out I'm playing a game that I'm not privy to. And we all play this game, and we don't know we're privy to it, but it's being played on you every day. Better get in these books so you see what I'm talking about. I know you brothers know what I'm talking about, and I don't want to go too far, go too fast, because I don't want to confuse nobody. You see what I'm saying? Because this is confusing stuff when you get to talking about this fiction.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, brother. You're absolutely right. And I hear everything that you're saying.
And brother Real, how they brought this incorporated person from the sea onto the land. That's another
Go ahead. You guys was talking about the court. all courts are supposed to be common law courts. They're not supposed to be Roman equity courts. Roman equity is dictatorship. All courts are supposed to see that all this other stuff is colorable law. You was talking about statutes, ordinance, and what's called a few minutes ago. I was sitting back listening because this is the stuff I'm studying. And every time you hit points, man, my brain just start popping like a, man, just because it makes bells go off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Go ahead, Brother Rio. Clean it up.
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, it's a lot to unpack. And, you know, you have to do your research and your study because, you know, Brother Bragg, what you're going to find out is that these corporations, what they really operate under is trust law. Everything comes back to trust. And once you start understanding and studying what trust law is all about, then different pieces of the puzzle start to come together. So
I'd just like to say one more thing. You know that birth certificate, that bond that you're born with, that's also a bounty, right? When they stop you on the street, when they take your identification, they're trying to get to that social security number so that they can access your estate. I know y'all know what I'm talking about now.
Oh, yes, sir.
You are an estate. From the day you're born, you're an estate and you don't even know it.
Yes, sir. You're absolutely right.
But onto what you said, Brother Bragg, we got to be careful I agree with you when we're speaking on this because you have people out there looking to access that estate. And
right, but I'm not telling them nothing like that. We're talking
education. I know you. That's why I agree with you. That's why I said I agree with you in terms of that disclaimer, because you got people out here trying to access that estate and doing certain things, sending in paperwork, and really basically exposing themselves. So I agree with you on your first disclaimer. You have to be really, really, really careful in terms of the way you want to approach and do your due diligence before you move forward in one way or another, because they got many tricks up their sleeve.
Many tricks. Now you know that on the 17th, the Pope put out this edict. I have to go into my stuff to get it. I know you guys will really enjoy it too, man. Oh, my glasses.
Go ahead, Rio. You can kick on that. The edict to Barack Obama, the letter, you talking about the letter he wrote to the president?
No, the edict that he dissolved all corporations.
Yeah, that's the letter from the Pope.
Did.
Yeah, that's the letter from the Pope to Barack Obama, stating that you know, they pretty much revoked their charter because the United States is an extension of England anyway, and it's not a country; it's a corporation.
Three city state. We the military branch. Three city state. We the military branch. Washington D.C.
Yes, sir.
Right. Yes, but we also operate as the banking corporation because, you know, the dollar has run the world for, you know, centuries now, although, you know, that pretty much has come to an end. But, you know, Brother Dave talks a lot about that. But the United States is an extension of England, and I should say London. And London is just an extension of the Vatican. So you have a three-headed monster right there. Sure. But the United States is really just a corporation. It's not a country. And what the king did, he chartered the people to come here and start commerce. Right. And they've lied, they've cheated, and they've colluded the people into thinking that this is a country, and the people that come here can take on the name of Americans, which our people really don't understand that. You take a person who's born in China and you move him to another area and he's still a Chinese or a Manchurian or whatever you want to call him. He's just in a different location. But you got all these Europeans that came over here. Now all of a sudden they pass a law saying that they can call themselves Americans. And they're running around making contracts in our ancestors' names, which gives them the power to do so. But nobody's confronting them on that.
They're different citizens. They don't have green cards because they took their citizenship and nationality in that coup with the government. So they're different than we are. Because you got native, you got citizen, you got these Americans. Now American, I'm talking about indigenous American, that's born on American soil. I'm talking about that's always been here. That's an American. Or an autochthon. I don't know what you want to call it. A lot of people, I don't get into Moors, I don't get into all that stuff, man. I just don't.
What about Aboriginal?
Listen, I'm a copper-colored brother from America.
Yeah.
I don't listen. I don't have no hate against Africans. Understand me. I want you to understand this now. I don't hate no Africans, but I'm telling you, we the parent of the African. See, they even got this all twisted because they want to steal this landmass that you and I are standing on. Europeans, pilgrims, they're not from this country. They're from Europe. They're from the Caucasus Mountains. We are from this country. Every last country had a person that matched that soil. We're the copper color people of this country, of America. Then you got the Mexican. You got the Mexicans were here too. Now, I don't think they look like they do now because of the rape of our women. We produced all these different peoples. Now, you got to keep this always in mind. When these diseased people came out of Europe, they didn't have any women. That's why when they came through here, they were like ravaging beasts. Columbus and his people raped 3,000 women in one day. When they went into Puerto Rico, they killed damn near all the melanated men in Puerto Rico. That's why you got, in a lot of these countries, you got all these other people that are from the rape of the indigenous woman. People got to understand them. They came out of a diseased Europe. They didn't have women. Those Moors had women. They had harems and whatnot. But the regular Europeans, they were poor. They were dirt poor. They didn't take a bath for years at a time. They wore their clothes till they fell off. They practiced, man, just debauchery. All kind of sex things, man. One woman might have sex with 20 people and four or five of them be her family members. So they were inbred. So when they came here, these boys were like lunatics. That's why I tell people, do the history. When you do the history, see, they want to give you this clean thing with all these dudes with this shiny armor came over to be shiny. No, they were a bunch of ragtag thieves that were called on a crusade. Because this is all still part of the Inquisition when these boys come over here, Columbus and his band. Now, remember this. Columbus came over here. Who were the navigators? The navigators were Moorish navigators. On most of these boats, the Portuguese and Spanish.
They were Moors.
They were Moors. But they shouldn't have. They brought them over. They shouldn't have brought them over. Okay, remember when they're getting expelled in 1452 from because they caught hell. At the same time they're getting expelled, you got the Jacobians, who are King James and his melanated people. They're getting overran from the English and the Britons over there. Now remember the English and the Britons. Well, the English were originally melanated people. The Berbers, the Iberians, all of them, the Tuareg, they all look like us. Now, these English people, or Albions, they come from the caves. When they started running rampant, they wiped out. When they wiped out the black nobility, they take their place, take their names, take their coat of arms and everything. Jerry Rogers, look in his book of coat of arms. When I was a young man, I had that book for like 20-some years. I was trying to figure out, like, all these white folks with all these black coats on, why they got black coats on? Because after they wipe your black behind off, they take their coats of arms and they take your identity because they have none.
Yes.
This is what we talk about.
Your name.
Where you get this? That's right. And most people don't get it, man. It's deep too. Cause I'm saying I didn't get it overnight, so I'm not kicking anybody. Because it takes time, you know. If you research, you understand what I'm saying. It takes time to go through all these different readings, and you link up different information from this article, this paragraph, names. I was looking today, Cromwell. You know Cromwell was here. You know who Cromwell was? He whitewashed the history in England, right? Cromwell also came over here and came into Virginia. Oliver Cromwell. He's part of the problem here in America, too. He helped whitewash the history in America. So most people don't know Cromwell, but Cromwell is a real big thing.
Mm.
And that
yes,
Renaissance.
Yes,
that Renaissance. Another thing, when you hear that song, that Marine song from the shore of the Montezuma, they're talking about the defeat of the Moors. 1776 is when they really, 1776 was really the New World Order. Now, let me tell you why. Because these Albions took over the world at that time. They took that pop gun that the Moors developed, and they snuck over to China and got that gunpowder and put them together and made that Gatling gun. The other thing that made them terrible is when they got these devices that could break down the walls of the castle. So they took away the siege tactics. So you couldn't have 30, 40-day sieges where you sit them out. Now they could break into the castle and come get you. That changed everything. Because remember, every castle that was in Europe, the Moors built it. The Albions didn't do shit. All they did was assume shit. This is what people don't know about this.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Let me, and like you were telling you, these were nothing but barbaric, psychopathic lunatics. And I'm going to read this little portion out of the book, The Conquest of America. And it specifically speak to exactly what you said. And let me read this real fast. It says, as to the way in which children were treated, some Christians encounter an Indian woman who was carrying in her arms a child that sucked. And since the dog they had with them was hungry, they tore the child from the mother's arm and flung it, still living, to the dog, who proceeded to devour it before the mother's eyes. These are the type of people we're dealing with, that exactly what you were explaining, Brother Bragg. And I just wanted to just elucidate that to the people so they can see how foul and what is the true nature of these crackers that came over here.
They were nothing nice. And another thing. And people be tripping when I tell them this. When you checking the Columbus shit real good, you check these Spanish explorers, they was coming to the Holy Land. They knew where they was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this. The Moors have been coming back and forth here forever. Now, also
forever.
Remember this. I'm telling you, this right here is Egypt. That's why all these artifacts and shit is here. This is the oldest continent. But these Europeans, Albions, they don't want you to know that because they're trying to steal your birthright from under your feet. So they want to point you at Africa. If they drop you and me in the middle of Africa right now, brother, we dead meat. You know that? Them Africans is killing each other left and right about the landmass over there. Now, we don't have no horse or dog in that fight. You know what I'm saying? Our fight is over here, and that's all I'm saying. Look at the
psychology. Let's have a dialogue here. What about the bloodline? When to say that we don't have a dog in that fight when you're talking about our brothers and sisters on the continent, we know that we are dealing with the movement of a particular bloodline in terms of black folk of all different descent going back to one. So why would you say we don't have a dog in that fight? If you could maybe bring that to me,
saying,
then I can look
I'm
at
saying,
it from a different direction.
This is what I'm saying. You better fight for the land that you stand on. Nobody's going to get anything until we secure our position. We're the keepers of this land. We're the keepers. Matter of fact, we're the keepers of this world. And somewhere in here, long in here, we done got tricked and we done got put on the bottom. And if we don't do our due diligence, we won't get back where we belong. Those brothers over there, now tell me this. If they were to drop you and me in the middle of Africa, what are you going to do? But what you know about the middle of Africa? This is because I asked my family this. People tell me that. Who you know in Africa? Do you know somebody in Africa, bro? I'm just going to ask you the question. Ask my family the same question. Who you know in Africa?
Well, let me tell you this.
I've been to Africa. I've been there for three years.
What family member do you have in Africa?
I've been there for 3 years. You can survive in Africa, brother. Believe me.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm asking you, what family member do you have in Africa? Grandmother, cousin, first uncle. You know, what family member you got in Africa? Now,
I don't,
I'm telling you, they could be, they are cousins, but their family's in America, bro. That's all I'm saying. I'm telling you, I talk to Africans. They be laughing at us, man, because they know that Back to Africa movement was sponsored by Jewish minds. Get into that Back to Africa movement. Marcus Garvey and all them boys, look, I don't disrespect none of my elders, but he was working for the Jewish boys. I don't have nothing against Marcus Garvey because he was bringing black pride. But in the end, when he got too big, you see who pulled a rug from under him, don't you? They put a bad woman on him, made an accusation, sold him boats that wasn't worth nothing. I mean, that's every movement we had. Every movement we had, if you really do your due diligence, you won't find out that there was a Judas Golden there somewhere that sunk us. Just like I'm saying now, I don't kick the Moors because they brought a lot of stuff to civilization, period. But I also
okay,
say
brother,
this,
but
those Moors was screwing around over there with them Europeans. They wouldn't have never brought them over here. They enslaved some Moors, they killed some Moors. Some Moors fell in with the kings and queens and brought them over here and told all the secrets over here. They came right over here and started going for gold. That's why they was in craze for gold, because people led them to it, because they knew that the people walked around here, copper-colored people walking around with gold and shit, gold laying on the ground. And guess what? They didn't care about the gold. It was just ornamentation to them, because it was natural. Just like a man that eats every day, he ain't going to kill you for an apple, but a man that don't have nothing, he'll kill you for an apple. He'll kill you for a piece of gold. And that's what happened. Europeans saw all the wealth that the Moors had. And that's the other thing. That's a whole other thing about the Moors. When they came up out of Europe, there was a Templar bunch that was rich as hell. They followed them Moors because they wanted their wealth. Notice the Templars kind of disappeared. And the Templars were the Knights Templars. K-N-I-G-H-T, Dark Knight. Because, see, I had to get on some brothers a long time ago because they hired everything. When the Knights was black. That's why they call them Knights. But people, just like, for instance, I'll show you an upside-down shit. Black is really white. I know you guys know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Without color.
But everything is upside down because of trick knowledge of these words and legalese and whatnot. But then that's a whole other thing. But these Moors, I'm going to study these Moors until I find out exactly how this
Brother
Bragg, shit definitely
let me,
went down.
Let me get, but Brother Bragg, let me get at you about something. I feel where you're coming from in terms of, you know, they're having black people standing on this landmass dreaming of a homeland, something else, when we know that the origins of our people have been here in this land, and that the first people to inhabit all the different lands and the islands were African people. But is
the
there any
this landmass? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, where are you sourcing that from? Where are you sourcing that from in terms of this landmass being older? Because
esoteric books. And you got to read different books because guess what? You're going to find your best information in esoteric books, Masonic books. You got to get into them. That's where they hide their secrets.
But let me ask you this. When you look at the physical remains of what has been found on the earth and you look at archaeology, the oldest bones and the oldest people have been found on the continent of Africa. Tell me how you speak
yes,
to that.
Sir. South Carolina, a black man, older than all of them. South Carolina. A black man, a melanated man.
Old as what?
He's going to change the whole. I got it in my phone. You know what? Just tell us, leave your number with Scotty, man. I'll call you guys. We can talk. Because, I can share a bunch of stuff with you guys. No doubt. I don't have no problem with that. But I'm telling you, it's a man from South Carolina. I think they charted him in like 350,000 years, something like that. He's getting ready to rearrange all of Logic. And remember this. You got a nation of people trying to steal your birthright. I'm trying to think of this society. It's a society that they formed, and this society was formed specifically to send you and I to Africa. Not just you and I, all the people from America. They had a 25-year plan to send us all out of here to Africa because they wanted America. That's why they came and set their operation up here. Get into that Destiny of America with Manly P. Hall, Secret Destiny of America with Manly P. Hall. He'll blow your mind back because, see, he tells how it goes. And then again, Manly P. Hall is one of the foremost authors. If you start getting to esoteric learning, follow that dude. He dropped them breadcrumbs all over.
He's got a real heavy book called The Secret Teaching of All Ages as well.
Okay, I'm sorry, Brother Bragg. I had to go ahead and mute you, brother. We need to go ahead and wrap up. We definitely gonna have to continue this conversation and later discussions in different shows. But to kind of tie everything back together, Scotty made a good point about there are several different groups of immigrants who are they're trying to cite federal laws against slavery and human trafficking, and they're suing and they're taking the United States into the courts. Some of them are having success, some of them are not. The difference between that I wanted to highlight between them and our situation is these immigrants are coming in knowing who they are, and they are tying themselves back to a landmass where their people have been traditionally for generations. And everybody in the world understands who they are and what their lineage is. So they are recognized within the families of nation, and they have some type of standing or status in order to be able to bring the United States into a venue to be able to sue. As long as we are going by a lot of made up terms or terms that are given to us, such as African American, black, colored, how they define Negro, we are not going to see reparations because we're talking about a fictional class of people who aren't tied to any kind of landmass, no history, no melanated roots to hold on to. So we really have to take a look at that, and we are definitely going to be unpacking that as well as a lot of topics that came up into discussion today. We're going to have to study, and we're going to have to love on each other and pass along the information that we all are gathering. Brother Tom, you got anything to add to that?
I agree. I believe we are, Brother Reg, I wanted you to get an opportunity, and maybe we can do that next time, speak to your experience, the 3 years that you lived in Africa, the culture, the people, the experiences you had, and I would like you to communicate that with the people as well. But, Mario, okay. Brother Rio, go ahead, Brother Reg.
One quick question. The brother was saying how they wanted people to go back to Africa, so I'm saying to myself, if so, why are they putting so many child support cases on brothers and they taking passports where they can't leave the country, so they have to be enslaved to the U.S. government? And I'm out.
Okay.
Brother, we're talking about different times.
I know, Brother Bragg. I wish we had time because I want Brother Bragg to be it. I know he want to respond to that. But like I said, we're running out of time, and we're going to be able to continue these type of conversations. But let me get to my final out. My final out is we need to wake up as a people. I know there's fear attached to the brutality of these Europeans, but we are greater than all of this, and we have to recognize that our status and buying into labels that they apply to us and put on us is what is putting us in this situation. You know, you're not gonna, the system is not gonna change. Police officers are not gonna stop doing what they do because they're sanctioned by the government to go out and do what they do. So it's a waking up time. It's a time for research, reading, understanding, growing. That's the only way we're going to be able to change the situation we're in. We have to start thinking as a nation and start moving in that direction, Brother Rio. Go ahead.
I totally agree. And we also have to highlight, which we're going to do on Melanated Roots, some of the plots, the plans, the deceptions that have transpired throughout history that got us into the situation that we are in. We are also going to have to grow up and take some responsibility and understand that we put ourselves in a very tough situation. You know, when they talk about the fall of man, they're talking about our ancestors, and we fail, and we fail hard. We turned on each other. You know, you could say we lusted after other gods. We didn't remain true to the teachings that were passed down to us. But if we are to rise, we are going to have to return. We have to understand those lessons first and foremost, and then we're going to have to figure out how to apply those lessons in today's society, world, and reality, in order to regain our greatness. And, I am going to have to disagree with you on one thing, but, you know, the over in Africa, we're going to need them. They're going to need us, and we're going to need them. We're going to need
absolutely
people on the planet to join together because, you know, these Tammy Hughes, they putting their foot on our necks, all of us, together. And we only going to rise together. So, but we'll continue that conversation at a later date. I kick it over to you, Brother Tommy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Brother Rio. Brother Bragg, appreciate you calling in. Love your energy and your input. Brother Reg, greatly appreciate you calling in. Love your energy and your input. And like I said, we're going to keep this thing moving in a positive direction. And we just want to thank you guys for tuning in and for supporting us and for all the people that support Black Talk Radio. This is a station that we need. We need to have a gathering place, a meeting place for us to come together as a people. And my dad always tells me two heads is better than one. And Brother Dave says a dialogue is better than a monologue. And I agree with both of those. And we got to come together. We have to exchange ideas, and we have to continue to move forward. So we appreciate y'all for tuning in.
Technical difficulties as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, everybody, take care. We out of here.
Peace. Peace out.